Welcome to Indoctrination, a weekly conversation series about protecting yourself from systems of control. I'm your host, Rachel Bernstein.
Hi, everyone. Wanted to let all of our listeners know that we just launched a new Facebook group for the show. It is titled simply Indoctrination Podcast Discussion Group. This group, as you may have picked up from the title, aims to serve as a space for you, the listener, to discuss weekly episodes, but also to share experiences, your own insights with fellow survivors and allies. I've been running survivor support groups for many years now, and I found that in a group setting, members often feel a sense of validation and affirmation by hearing from others who have shared similar experiences. So we hope that with this new Facebook group, we can simulate that kind of experience, at least digitally. Our social media manager, Andrew Pledger, who longtime listeners will know from his appearances as a guest on the show, will be the administrator of the group alongside me and will help to facilitate what we hope to be insightful and helpful conversations for listeners and survivors alike. We welcome anyone affected by a cult, abusive relationship, or system of control, as well as anyone interested in learning more about these topics. To join, simply click the link in the show notes of this episode or search for Indoctrination Podcast Discussion Group on Facebook. We hope to see you there. Today on the show, we have Nikki G. She is a certified trauma recovery coach who helps survivors recover and thrive after religious trauma and cult involvement. She's also a survivor of multiple narcissistic relationships, religious trauma, as well as former member of multiple cultic communities. Nikki is the CEO of Nikki G Speaks LLC, which exists to support survivors with individual coaching services, an online community, and other various forms of psychoeducation related to religious trauma, narcissistic abuse, and cult involvement. Nikki is also a co-host of the podcast Surviving the Black Church, where she and her co-hosts delve into conversations regarding religious trauma in the Black Church, and she and another colleague have just recently founded the Black Religious Trauma Recovery Network, which is a resource to educate, support, and empower Black religious trauma survivors. Nikki also sits on the board of directors for Tears of Eden. Connect with Nikki and learn more about her work at NikkiGSpeaks.com. Here's Nikki now. It is a total delight to have Nikki back with me on the show today, and we're going to be covering so much, so we need to get right to it. We have It's like the Lions, Tigers, and Bears show, right? Like one thing after the other. There's so much that we want to talk about, but also it ties into itself, right? They're all kind of interconnected, which is a really interesting thing too. So if you can take a few moments to introduce yourself, and then we'll start digging in.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thanks, Rachel, for welcoming me back on the podcast. I love this podcast, and I think this is probably the best place to talk about what we're going to get into today. But I am Nikki G. I am a certified trauma recovery coach, and I'm also a survivor of a narcissistic family system, religious trauma, and multiple cults. I think the last time I was here, I went over some of the cults that I was a part of. And in those cults, about 2 to 3 of them were more hybrid cults with religious and political merging together. And so this is kind of more of my personal journey we're going to kind of get into today as to how I'm able to even talk about the topics we're going to get into on this episode. So as far as my work that I do, I co-host a podcast called Surviving the Black Church Podcast. I also co-founded something called the Black Religious Trauma Recovery Network, where we support survivors from the Black community of religious trauma and cult involvement. And I'm also on the board of Tears of Eden with Catherine, one of my friends and colleagues. So I'm a little busy in the field, but that's a little bit of what I've been doing lately. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, incredible. Yeah, I know. To have Catherine on, and we did a video together for a conference. It was really, really great. And I love that she's put together this whole realm as well as you, which is fantastic. And also to have it be where you are reaching out to a particular community that I think feels so disenfranchised. And there are particular needs within certain communities, even though, yes, there's crossover. But I think it's really wise to just have what you have so that there's this lovely holding space for people who get it and who can relate to each other in this significant way. And so if you don't mind me starting there with reaching out to the Black community, what is different from your understanding of that makes you feel like, you know what, we need our own place to talk about this?
Right, right. And thank you for that question and highlighting, my community. First of all, there's not a lot of research. There's not a lot of statistics even on our experiences. Many survivors don't even realize that they are religious trauma survivors or, you know, even cult survivors. So a lot of psychoeducation has to go into bring an awareness that, yes, you did, in fact, you know, experience this. And what does it look like now? But for those who have, they've been reaching out to other recovery groups, and many are appreciative of the knowledge they're learning and connecting with others. But they often say, there's still so much of my story I don't feel comfortable unpacking. And so I lead support groups for Black religious trauma survivors, and they get to kind of just be themselves and speak to the different cultural nuances that goes into their experiences. We have it twice a month. It's interesting. We have some that come out of Christianity, some that come out of the Jehovah's Witness religion, and that in and of itself is very, very insidious, what a lot of them have been through, lots to repair. But a lot of them are grateful that they can, you know, express themselves in such ways and feel like you said earlier, that someone gets it. They understand the significance of the church mother and the prophet of the house and the pressure they put on you when you're in these type of spaces. And then the generational component too, as far as if you decide to leave the religion or the church or the community and, you know, just being ostracized. And of course, there are other groups that go through that as well, but it's different because the connection to Christianity and the Black community, you know, the fabric of it goes all the way back to slavery and being enslaved and things of that nature. So we unpack a lot. Very complex trauma.
Really, so much so. And in the former cult member support group that I do, there's a woman who's Black who talks about it being an extension of your home. And so that's also just like if something happens there, it's happening in your home. And I hadn't had that sensitivity about it. And I'm sure it's not the same for everyone across the board. You can't make like sweeping generalizations, but that's the hub. That's the heart of the community where she grew up. And so can you go against what your parents in that home are saying, you know, and can you even be angry about what's happening to you there? It was very interesting. I could see the depth of the emotion.
And then there's the other aspect of that. It's in the home, but if you decide to leave the religion, or leave the church, or leave the home, you still undergo a lot of pressure from the generational line. Grandma will be calling you every Friday at 6 o'clock and saying, are you going to church this weekend? Uncle Charlie and, you know, Auntie Sue are coming to the house, bringing a meal, but they want to sit down and talk to you about how are you going to get back in with God? Because outside of the church means outside of God and means you are prey to the enemy's devices. And so the pressure never ends. That's why a lot of survivors, they don't come out of what I call the proverbial spiritual closet and share sometimes where they are on their spiritual journey. Or if they even want to have one, they don't usually disclose that with their family members. They just endure Christmas time and Thanksgiving time and endure going to church services just to keep the peace, because that seems easier than letting them know, you know, exactly where they stand. So, yeah.
My goodness. And then you have this double life, right? Two different existences, and you have to hide yourself with the people who are closest to you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is really, really rough. What I really love about what we're going to be talking about is this crossover of religion and state and spirituality and politics and, you know, and sort of where our founding fathers made it so clear, and I think for good reason, that we need to keep those things separate. There is a lot of talk now about how that's not really what the founding fathers really wanted and really meant. And so there's a kind of a revision of that piece of our history. But at the same time, there was some wisdom in it, but there seems to be a lot of crossover. And so I would love for you to start talking about the new apostolic reformation, just what that is, and sort of use that as a point of discussion to kind of lead us in to talking about a lot of other things and a lot of other people. Go for it.
Okay. Well, first, I have a disclaimer.
Yeah. Go
and for my, it. And my disclaimer is, my purpose here is to inform and to kind of share from a survivor lens a lot of our what we will talk about today. I'm not a politician. I'm not a theologian. You know, I don't want to be. I'm not a political pundit, but I've rubbed shoulders with a lot of people who are contributing to some of the chaos we've seen over the last, I would say, 8 years or so. And because of that, I feel strongly about speaking out about a lot of these topics. This is not my first time, but I know we're in such a crucial time in history in America right now. And I think it's important to inform. So if I could give one word of why I'm here to inform. These are topics that people really don't want to talk about beyond politics, just looking into the eeriness of what could be. And it's easier to just say, well, I'm going to play baseball. Go play baseball. But when you come back home and you shower and you sit down, we need to have these type of conversations, because where it seems like we could head, where we've been, is not something that popped up overnight. There was a long trajectory to it, and a lot of people are seeing only the political aspect of it, and they're not seeing what's going on behind the In my opinion, if they were to have their way, a lot of people who are trying to create a new reformation, the political sect would be an avatar. And what's really behind it is the desire for, and I'm just going to be frank, spiritual colonization, the desire for a theocracy, the desire for an authoritarianism. And so we're seeing politics and we get caught up in that. But if we need to go to the root to see how we got where we got. And that is part of what I want to unpack by talking about the new apostolic reformation. So
wow.
I'll pause there. I can still answer your question, but yeah, I wanted to give that disclaimer.
Thank you. And I just spiritual colonization. I'm writing some notes as you're talking. Can I just jump into your disclaimer for a moment and then you'll go on?
Yeah. Go for it.
Okay. So what I'm thinking about is the idea of informing. Because it is an incredibly powerful word. It doesn't have that kind of like that weight to it. It seems very simple, you know, you're just informing someone. But I think it is at the root of showing respect.
Yes.
I'm going to give you information that you need to have. I think you can disagree with it or whatever else, but I feel wrong not sharing it if I have it. And it could protect you potentially, but it could also help you make a fully informed decision. And that is one of the bases of consent, to be able to make a fully informed decision. So it is very powerful, actually, what you're doing. And I think some people who don't want to hear it are going to hear it as an attack, or going to hear it as you just trying to dredge up lies, etc. And you're not trying to attack anything, and you're not trying to give anyone a hard time. You're just saying, I have these little bits of information that, you know, my conscience is leading me to share. So I want to inform you, take it or leave it, but here it is, right? Is that, that feel right?
Yeah. And I'm glad you highlighted that. Another part of my disclaimer is I'm not here to tell anybody how to vote, if you should vote, you know, what political side to be on. That is not the purpose here. The purpose is, like you said, informing and helping people to have access to information they may not have access. And like I said, because I am a survivor of a lot of these groups, a lot of people are not, you only see the politics, the avatar, but it's so much more that's at stake, and not just for our country, but the globe worldwide. So yeah.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So as far as what is NAR, New Apostolic Reformation, I'm going to pull back the curtain just a tad before NAR. And when you think about Christianity, again, I'm not a theologian, so some of you can run circles around it, but I just want to give this for context. You had Catholicism at first. And then around, I think, 1517, Martin Luther said, wait a minute, I don't like this papal supremacy. I don't like where this is going, you know, the Pope and the position of the Pope and just being very godlike. And so there was the Martin Luther Reformation, and that happened. And they were really going against that control and that seemingly authoritarian type of style of governing the church. And so out of the Reformation came Protestantism. And so out of Protestantism, this is where you get all these different denominations, Anglican, Episcopalian, Charismatics, Pentecostal, Lutheran. People's like, oh, so many denominations. Well, this is how a lot of this got birthed, right? And so when we speed up to the New Apostolic Reformation, there were leaders that had been praying and fasting and believing that how the state of the church now is not what God intended. We need another reformation. So the New Apostolic Reformation is, in their mind, a third wave or a third reformation. Now, people may be saying, well, if it's a reformation, how come I didn't hear about it? You know, I kind of agree too. But in their mind, this is big and this is huge. And it's not a matter about you hearing about it. It's more about you seeing the results. And so with this reformation, they believed that God was ordering something and he needed something. And he needed the office of the apostles and the prophets to be reestablished in the church. And therefore, it would be established in a government and therefore established globally. There's a deficit. They believe that the church as it was is not enough. If we are going to populate the planet for Christ, for his return, for a biblical worldview, it's going to take more than what church, you know, has been in the past. And so a guy named Peter Wagner, who has since passed, I forgot, maybe early 2000s. I don't remember exactly the date that he passed. I did meet him and had a chance to talk to him a few times as well, too. He is the one that coined the phrase New Apostolic Reformation. And so what they basically believe is the apostle and the prophet office are the ones to spearhead where the church should be going now. And these apostles and prophets have been delegated by God with authority to totally help transform church as we know it. Now, there may be some people that say, well, Nikki, I'm a Christian. I go to church. I've never heard of this. I understand. There's a lot of people who haven't, depending on what denomination you fall under, depending on, you know, how you express your faith, you might not have heard about it. But that does not mean that there's not impact and it's not happening. Their goal was not necessarily to impact the average believer. Their goal was more, it wasn't micro, it was more macro. They had a long-term goal. And the goal was, like I said earlier, in my opinion, they wouldn't express it this way, spiritual colonization, where you're taking your beliefs, you're taking the beliefs that you feel God is giving you, and you are not only helping to implement it in your sphere, but you're also looking to export these beliefs to other countries. Because in your mind, this is what God is ordaining for you to do. So I pause right there and see, you look like you have a lot of questions.
yeah. Right. I mean, I think even just right at the end when you were saying, you know, this is what God really wants you to do. There are so many people throughout history who speak for God. And I wonder about this kind of movement here that, you know, you have people who are saying this is what God intends and this is what God intended and this is what God wants. And they're at odds with each other. And so, you know, what do people do with that phrase? Because so many of the people who I work with post, you know, getting out of something that was not healthy for them, is that they really felt they couldn't go against any of the teachings, right? Because they were going against God, or by leaving, they were leaving God. So just to, if we can jump into that for a moment before we go back to the crossover of these movements in politics. If they're saying, you know, one says God says to turn right, then the other one says God says to turn left. What do you do there?
It's really hard. It's really hard to quantify that, because how can you determine if God said this or that to that person? You know, in this case, these are driven people who really believe with every fiber of their being that they're hearing from God and they're supposed to do this. If you look at it on a micro level, there are sometimes people feel like they're hearing from God or, you know, the creator or spirit and telling them, go move to this state, go marry this person, you know, and a lot of the cults I've been in, that is, I would say 90% how they use the abusive tactics that they do. All they have to do is say they had a dream, they had an encounter, an angel visited them. You know, they saw something, they were caught up in whatever realm. This also happens in more spiritual cults as well, too. You know, they had a visitation and from there, they lay out blueprint. And how do you quantify that? How do you gauge that? You know, you can't. And so a lot of people, if they feel inferior to that leader, they will often submit to that so-called revelation and say, well, that's the leader, so they have to be right. And so I'm just going to trust God and believe what he gave his prophet and apostle and follow. Even if at it is the expense of going against your own intuition or going against your own logic, a lot of times people will put that behind them and not, you know, have healthy skepticism and critical thinking and actually say, you know what, I don't agree with that, you know. But it is a difficult thing even to work through in healing and recovery. You know, did God say that? Was that me? Was that the pizza I ate last night? Was it really a joke? You know, and it takes a while to get through the origin of our belief systems, you know?
Right. Absolutely right. Okay. Thank you for that. Because, you know, that is something that really causes people a lot of confusion and panic, I think. When they leave and they're told that, you know, God only exists there and now they left there. And what do they have and who do they have? And I think, you know, as a trauma counselor, and, you know, I'd love at some point to talk a little bit more about that work that you do. How do you help people who are told that, who are given that message that they are now unprotected?
A lot of it is patience. When you're on the other side of assisting and supporting someone and helping them to experience choice, helping them to experience being able to make decisions for themselves, even if it's as frivolous, so to speak, as picking between chocolate, ice cream, or vanilla. You know, before you default to, did God tell me to get vanilla or chocolate? How about you take, you choose. And then after you choose, how do you feel? How do you feel in your body? What's coming up for you? So you slowly start to help them, you know, participate in some of these exercises to help the fear start to dissipate a little bit and for them to come to conclusion, God is not going to strike me down if I chose chocolate, but I had a dream I was eating vanilla. And I'm obviously being facetious, but that the point is helping them to come into their own choice and agency, because a lot of that is robbed and perverted and taken away from them in these cults and, you know, religious trauma and things of that nature. That's just a start, just a start.
Right. But you're right. It's really debilitating because you're second guessing everything and worried about every tiny little decision. Right. And pretty much assured that you think left up to you without advice, wholly from someplace holy, that you'll make the wrong decision.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Wow.
And it takes time, I believe, for a survivor to get to the point where they're comfortable making their own decisions. You know, but we look at the process before making that decision, the process of making that decision, and how do you feel and how do you regulate yourself? And then post-decision, what happened? And if you see the sky did not fall, if you see that, you know, God still is connected, and for those that still have a relationship with God, there's still a connection, there's still love there. You start to break through those, you know, ideologies that you can only live and be guided if an apostle or a prophet or a guru is giving you instruction, you know? So you start to break that dependency off just by little exercises such as that.
Cool. That's so helpful. So practically helpful. Okay. All right. So let's go back to what you were talking about. Go for it.
Okay. So getting back to talking about NAR, like I said, Peter Wagner coined the phrase, who died in 2016, but they really believed that this is what God was calling for. And so, I mean, a lot of leaders talked about something like this, but it wasn't until Peter Wagner started to get involved. He wrote books, he traveled globally and started to spread this message that God is doing a new thing. He's doing another reformation, and this is needed. Because what were they seeing that were deficient with the church? They weren't satisfied. They felt, and I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but they felt like the church should be a little bit more active and militant and involved in society than it was. That the church shouldn't just remain in the four walls and, you know, it's all about who's ever in the church and what you do there. We have to open the doors and actually go out to be change agents. Those are some terms they use. To be world shakers. That's another term they use. To be influencers in society, because they felt that the devil's people, the enemy's people, were the ones who were at the top being the change agents and the world shakers and the influencers. And that's why America is in the state it's in. The world is in the state that it's in. So God is waking up his apostles and prophets and saying, I need you to start getting the church in alignment with this new vision that I have. Now, if you're sitting in there, it sounds like, oh yeah, you know what? There are problems out in the world. Society has gone to hell in a hand basket or whatever. There are problems. This sounds like, yes, let's get behind this, especially if you're saying God is ordaining it, why not? And so what they started to do is they started to challenge the church and they started to change how you look at scripture. So maybe someone saw the scripture in the Bible where it talks about, I think it's in Genesis, talking about taking dominion, you know, taking dominion, you know, and the passage that's in the Bible in the New Testament where Jesus was fasting and the devil came to him to tempt him and took him up to a high mountain and said, look at all of this. All you have to do is worship me now. You can get this right now. Well, in the passage, Jesus did not do that. But the point was that you can get the glory, that those mountains, those spheres of influence can be translated over to your people and you versus my people and my agenda. And so they're taking a lot of these scriptures to heart. And so they said, okay, what do we need to do? Well, first we have to start distinguishing between a church and what they call their headquarters, apostolic centers or apostolic hubs. So it looks totally different than an average church service. There are ministries all over the globe that would be considered an apostolic center, an apostolic hub. They may not even have that in their name of their ministry, but how it functions is very similar to that. And so in the apostolic hub, you would find more activity of the gifts of the Spirit. You will find more activities where it's demonstrating, dancing, and blowing shofars. And some people connect with Israel and they have an agenda, you know, to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and they merge that with the politics. And there's a lot of activation and more warlike type of activities that are there. So they look at the Bible as a manifesto versus it's something to encourage yourself, encourage your family, encourage your neighbor, be a good citizen on this planet and go home. They said, no, that has kept us in a passive position and we need to be active now. We need to be on the offense instead of on the defense. And so in these places, you'll hear messages that talk about surrendering. Surrendering to your purpose, surrendering to the call of God on your life, and surrendering to the prophet and the apostle that God has ordained. And so you'll find messages that talk about you going out into society, finding out where you're supposed to be. Who has a desire to do documentaries? Don't go do documentaries for DreamWorks or Pixar. Find a call of God and do a documentary for the cause of Christ. Who feels called to go into the sphere of politics? We need judges. We need governors. We need presidents that have the same ideology so that they can start advancing and taking dominion. So like I said, a lot of it moves from what people know maybe as an average church atmosphere now into a militant manifesto type atmosphere where there's strategy and there's agenda. And it's been going on for decades. But the average person in our country or even globally has not really known of it, because why would they? Even some people that are believers have not known that this type of belief system within Christianity exists. And so it's been in secret, but now we look at Project 2025, we look at Trump, we look at January 6th, we look at so many things that have happened over the past 8 years and say, how do we get here? It started with this type of agenda. So I'll pause right there.
Right. So the term dominionism is one that, you know, makes me nervous. and so, you know, it's not like, you know, being shoulder to shoulder with your neighbor, appreciating differences and incorporating different belief systems and respecting another person's way of believing anything, really. It's really about taking over. And whenever you hear language like that, it usually does go hand in hand with something very militaristic. And this very clear decision that this is what is right and best and needed for everyone everywhere. And that is quite a statement, I think. And so it feels like if they're on that mission, they're not going to want to stop until they have spread the word everywhere.
Listen, you're absolutely right. And it scares me now too, even though I was a part of the movement, you know, having been out years now and really starting to read and research when I got out as far as what I was in. It's very scary. And it's been happening. And again, just like I said, politics is an avatar for this stuff that I'm talking about. Trump was an avatar for politics. You know, Trump really, and again, you know, for the listeners, this is not about me being pro-Trump or pro-Kamala or whatever. This is about showing you what's behind politics at the root of it. But he really didn't have an agenda when he was in office. I still don't believe he has an agenda now if he were to get back in. He is an avatar. These groups that I'm talking about now, and I haven't gotten to the merge of the politics yet, but these groups, these lobbyists, these organizations, they have been creating agenda for decades. They just needed the right person, the right avatar with the right personality, although clinicians would disagree with him having the right personality, to actually bust open the door to get a lot of their agenda in. And because of his personality, you know, it seems like he is more concerned about retaliation, revenge, people, you know, his loyalists. That's kind of where his focus is, not necessarily governing. So even when he was in office, a lot of the things, if he did sign things into law, if he did get involved with Congress, a lot of that was at the extension of a lot of these groups. They had the policy. They have the agenda. They work with the politicians. They work with Congress. And we get to where we are now and where we could be in the next 4 or 5 years. And so this is what people need to understand. And dominionism is the goal. Theocracy is the goal, if you will. A lot of them in the apostles, the prophets, those who are under Christian nationalism type of ideology, those who think this way, believe that those of the Christian affiliation are behind. And we need to be in the front and we need to lead, because after all, this country was founded on Christian principles. This country should continue on Christian principles, and the world should continue on Christian principles, because their trajectory is every nation for Christ, every person for Christ. And I'm not here to bash anyone's religious affiliation. The key word here, and I think we already talked about it earlier, is choice. It's agency. It's consent. You may feel that way. You may have strong beliefs. And I actually respect the fact that you have those beliefs. But when you start to impose your beliefs on other people, then we have a problem. Because now it may have the appearance or the avatar that is the Christian nation. But how did it become that? Did you force that on people? Did you remove their agency? Did you work so it would cease to be a democracy? Did we move into a theocracy? Are we moving into authoritarianism? Are we potentially moving into fascism? How, if you're claiming the stats that this state belongs to Christ, this region of the country belongs to Christ, this country, this world belongs to Christ, how did that happen? Did it happen by military invasion? Did it happen by stripping people their laws and choice and agency? If it happens that way, then that's a pseudo success, I would think. You know, it's not coming from a person's heart. It is better to inspire and influence than to control and to manipulate and to remove choice and agency. And so that is what I'm highlighting more than people's belief systems, if that makes sense.
Right. Absolutely right. And I do at some point want to get into exactly that, how the NAR movements are ripe, as you said, for spiritual abuse and cults. I think because of all that you just mentioned and us versus them, and we have the true answer, the only answer, et cetera, et cetera. So is that something that you want to get into for a few moments now, or should we wait until...
It's up to you. Yeah. It's up to you. We can get into that now if you want.
All right. Yeah, because I think just you're giving these examples of how the system is run and the kind of thinking that is being promoted, and it is very cult-like. And so what is going to make them ripe from your perspective for spiritual abuse and cults?
Well, if you're starting at the foundations of a movement, the New Apostolic Reformation, and the movement is the apostles and prophets have the say, and there's no one over them. There's no checks and balances. There's no ethics. That right there is a big problem. That's a big cultic marker right there. But then they go further and deeper into that. And in these apostolic hubs, they teach that you need a spiritual covering in order for you to launch out into society and starting to take dominion and taking the land for Christ. So you may be gifted to start a podcast, but that doesn't mean you're supposed to start it right away. You need to come up under some type of covering, whether it is as micro as having spiritual parents who can vouch for you, pray for you, lead you and guide you, or as macro as you needing to be up under an apostolic hub, under an apostle, having a prophet at the disposal of timing, when you should launch out, how you should launch out, what you should do. And so in order to have this movement, they need people to be totally codependent on them and dependent on them for guidance. That's another marker. They use a lot of spiritual imagery. And so, you know, you can have an apostle who you're under call you the next day and said, well, God spoke to me while I was driving, or I had an encounter. And so again, you can't quantify that. You can't really hold it. It's ethereal. And now you're in a position where, well, I'm under this person, so I have to take it at face value. That is another way they can be intrusive. And now your choice, your agency, your own intuition, you're not tapping into that anymore. You're at the disposal of these leaders who say that they watch over your soul. And, you know, and so then they could mislead you and say, hey, you have a calling to go into to government, but your heart was always to teach young kids, you know, and so you forego that to follow what they say. And, you know, next thing you know, you're in something that you really didn't have a heart for, but you wanted to be obedient so that God could still use you. And so you wind up doing that. You know, there's also a lot of, like I said, messages of surrender, sacrifice, and obedience in these hubs. And so people who may feel like, you know what, I'm starting to pick up something's not right here. But you know what? That's the devil. That's not God. I just need to surrender some more. I just need to sacrifice some more. Maybe I'm just tired. Maybe I missed tonight's service, but I'm coming back strong on Sunday service. And I'm going to make the devil a liar, and I'm going to stand strong for God, and I'm going to follow these agenda because he's speaking to his man and woman of God. And so now, you know, you're in cognitive dissonance, you're suppressing your body's natural inclination to warn you that something's not right. There are so many different markers of this. And then, you know, the us versus them, you know, they make it seem people who are not having this agenda are either, you know, obsolete, they're archaic, they don't really know God. So now you start to develop an elitism and a pride and an arrogance that you know more and that God is calling a certain amount of people to help spearhead this. He doesn't need everybody. He needs those special ones outside of the prophet and the apostle. If you are privy to know this information as a believer versus someone who doesn't, there's some special anointing on you. So now we got the elitism. And then, you know, the us versus them. We are better than they are. The world is dark and ugly and nothing good can come from it unless God institutes this plan that the apostles and prophets have been preaching and teaching to us. So now, you know, you're talking about potential delusions, people maybe having hallucinations, starting to, you know, think that God is calling them to do this, that, and the third. And when you're in that environment, when I was in it, the amount of dreams I had to try to quantify what I was thinking I was called to do, it just kept making me feel like I'm on the right journey because I had a dream. I'm looking for synchronicities all over. Ooh, somebody had on a red shirt. I had on a red shirt in that dream, and their red shirt said, go forth. See, I know it. I'm supposed to go forth into this ministry. And so you're caught up in this vortex of spiritual warfare. We got to fight the people in the country that don't want this to happen. We got to fight the people that have the agenda that's anti-God. And you're consumed and obsessed with it. And you're definitely not present. You're definitely disassociated out your body. There's so many markers to what these systems do. And you, if you go out and you start to accomplish your mission, when you get tired, you can always come back to that apostolic hub. So, and you know, last time I was here, I named the different cults I was in. And since then, and returning now, one of the cults was the International House of Prayer in Kansas City. They don't call themselves an apostolic hub, but they are. Politicians have been there. They have a 24-hour prayer room where they pray some of these initiatives into the atmosphere, and they continue to what they call contend and contend and contend until they see it. A lot of what we see now as far as what legislation was when Trump was in office, what Project 2025 looks like it's coming, what it's shaped to be, has a lot to do of what has come out of these apostolic hubs.
Right. Okay. Got you. My goodness. Well, that also scares me. There's a lot about this that scares me. But also that they're not going by their name. Like, you don't know that it's apostolic until, if you know, you know, it's one of those situations, right? And, you know, I want to know what something is. I want to know how it's going to be viewing me and what it might be going for, like what its agenda is. And if you don't know, it's connected to this overall larger agenda, you can be a sitting duck. And I think that that's really, really kind of scary.
Well, I think now they realize that they're being highlighted a little bit more than, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Some are as emboldened to say, yes, I am an apostle, and this is my apostolic hub. This is my apostolic center. Others, they use different language. Another person we'll probably get into in a little bit later, Lance Wallnau, who is the one that coined the phrase Seven Mountain Mandate, he used to call himself a prophet and an apostle. He doesn't call himself that anymore. He calls himself a strategist, a global strategist. So they're hiding the language so that you can't see the intersectionality of Christian nationalism and NAR and all that stuff and politics. And they have found seats and been in close proximity with a lot of politicians, not just under the Trump administration, but we can go as far back as Reagan, you know, as far as how they've been involved. And the Heritage Foundation, they have been involved creating a lot of the policies that we now have experienced that have been, in my opinion, anti-democratic, you know, anti a person's individual rights, but it's been more pro this agenda that they believe. We're going back to beliefs. And I don't know if I can say this. If not, you can take it out. Some of these beliefs, in my opinion, are delusions. You know, and can you imagine apostolic centers and policies are the foundation of it is someone's delusion? That is very scary to me.
Right, right. It's akin to a lot of cults that I deal with, where a lot of the foundation of it, the theology of it, all of the philosophy is created by out of the mind of the person who's running it, and it depends if that person is healthy or not. Same thing with conspiratorial thinking, you know, just into this whole realm of, is this person rooted in reality or not? I would love to hear about the Seven Mountains and then Project 2025 and Mike Johnson. So where do you want to begin?
Well, I want to piggyback off of what you already asked earlier about Dominion theology, because that kind of helps set the stage for the Seven Mountains, you know, and a lot of what they believe for those who were Dominionists is that their personal faith and belief, they use it to reconstruct society that they consider a godless society. They consider it a godless society and without direction from God. And those who believe this believe that God is calling them to shake this up. It's interesting. You can have faith for God to heal you and do all these other things, but you can't believe that he could do other things. You have to get involved. It's very kind of a grandiose, narcissistic kind of thinking. But to reconstruct society away from a secular point of view, and this the Dominionism and Christian Reconstructionism kind of go hand in hand, which produces kind of a Seven Mountain Mandate, you know. And when you go back into Christian Reconstruction, for those who want to look it up, there's a guy named Rush Dooney is his last name, and he was a Calvinist, strict Calvinist, and he had a lot to do with coming up with the framework of the United States can't fulfill its destiny in God because America is a sinful and a fallen state. And it needs change agents in the colleges and in the government and different spheres of society to start to change this, to bring it back to not godlessness, but godful participation. And if you've seen The Handmaid's Tale, then you kind of know where I'm going with a lot of this, you know. And so they feel like biblical law, he felt like biblical law must replace secular law, that above the Constitution, above the Bill of Rights is biblical law. And they feel like it's gotten out of place and now it's time to take back that place. And so the Seven Mountain Mandate, like I said, a guy named Lance Wallnau, W-A-L-L-N-A-U, he's one that took a lot of Rush Dooney's teachings, a lot of Christian Reconstruction and Dominionism teachings. And he believed like, okay, like I said earlier, the church... we're in the back of the line, kids. We need to get up to the front of the line. Look at society. It's so bad. And God has been calling the church to get in the front of the line, be the line leader, and take over. And so he believed that there's a more systematic way to accomplish what Rush Dooney was saying and laid out from his work. And that is how he came up with the Seven Mountains or seven spheres of society. There are more, but he condensed it into seven. So religion is one, education is another, family mountain. And with family, you would also put healthcare in there. You would put the, you know, court system, and you would put sexual orientation would be in the family mountain. Education, let me go back. education would be on the collegiate level, secondary education, you know, all the way down to preschool. The business and finance, which is the fourth mountain, that would be, you know, from Wall Street to how we do our personal finances, you know, the stock market, you know, all the stuff like that would be under business and finance. Then we have the government and military. So obviously, you know, the three branches of government, the military being involved in, you know, all of that. Then you have the arts and entertainment mountain. And so sports, music, movies, and then you have the media. Podcasts, you know, news outlets and things of that nature. So he believed those are at least seven spheres of society that needs to be influenced. And he used the picture of a mountain because it spoke to what he felt needs to shift. So he felt at the bottom of the mountain is where a lot of the church is. They're going to church, they get a service. They come home, they love their brothers and sisters, and go to work, and they just have a good old life. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but hey. Apparently, the apostles and prophets in New Apostolic Reformation think that it's a problem. And the reason why is because they're like, well, while we're at the bottom of the mountain, at the top of the mountain are the secular leaders of these different spheres. And as long as they're at the apex, then God's kingdom cannot come. They believe this motto, phrase, as it is in heaven, so shall it be on earth. You also heard people say, as it is above, so shall be below. So their picture of what heaven looks like is this stuff. So if that's heaven to you, oh my gosh, you're going to be in a little segregated area to yourself. Like, but anyway, so they believe, okay, they're the apex. We're at the bottom of the mountain. How do we get to the top of the mountain? And so you're going to need the ones at the bottom, the 10s, the 20s, the 30s, to hear and go to an apostolic hub, hear these messages, hear these teachings, be inspired, be anointed and appointed to go out into one of those mountains and then start gaining influence on that mountain until you're all the way to the top. So if that means, let's say if I was 20 years old, a long time ago, but let's say I was 20 years old and I want to go to college and I don't know what I want to do. I'm still scratching my head and I go to an apostolic center with my mom who's really involved in all of this. This is all hypothetical, y'all. And a prophet comes on the microphone and says, you young lady, your name, what is your name? Nikki. Nikki, God is calling you to go into the entertainment mountain. You can sing. I really can't, but you can sing and God is calling you to bring and showcase his glory in the entertainment mountain because there's too many secular singers that are dragging people to a more demonic place. We need people to be on that mountain in a more godly place. So I'm getting this prophecy. I'm getting stirred up. I'm crying. I'm like, yes. So I go to school for music theory. I go and get, you know, voice lessons and everything like that. I start rubbing shoulders with this person and that person. And next thing you know, there's a possibility for me to make an album. And, you know, and I'm gaining up the mountain until I get to the top. And there are many at the top. It's not just one person. But the point is, position yourself to where you need to be and then start getting up to the mountain. And once majority of the church or the ones that are under this ideology are at the top, then we're really taking dominion. And it's not just stopping in America. Now we have to export this ideology to Brazil. We have to export this ideology to Africa, to Guatemala, which has actually been happening now, especially under the Trump administration. Oh, yeah. If, you know, the dealing with more with the reproductive rights, and more with anti-LGBTQ agenda, this is how they've been moving into these other countries and bringing this ideology over there. And the purpose is spiritual colonization, exporting someone's delusion when they were eating breakfast. And I'm not trying to belittle, but I'm getting down to the bare bones of it. Someone's imagination can cause such a shift globally. This is the trajectory of it.
That's incredible. Quite incredible. And also when you have these mountains, when you have anything that is kind of just an idea, you can't see it, you don't know where the top is. And so sometimes you also then need to wait until people in a position of authority are letting you know that you've reached it, right? So I think it keeps the dependency. It makes me think sometimes that I wish God were visible, because I would want God like to be able to say, oh no, I'm not with them. No, hey, I'm over here. Can you see me? I'm right over here. I'm not, those are not my friends. And just sort of guide people, because people decide, oh, we're with God. No, we're with God. The other thing is this interesting idea that these mountains, I think, are based on these very shaky, false foundations, which can make it tumble. And the false foundation, just an example that you gave, you need to go sing and go to the entertainment mountain, because this is the false part, secular music is bringing people closer to the devil. What? Okay. Well, how do we know that? What does that mean? And is that like, did you go there? Did you meet the devil? Like, hey, just had a question for you. And so then based on that, it's this black and white thinking, fear mongering, absolutism. And then based on this equation that there's no proof for, you now need to do it this way, our way, the opposite way. Right.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Right. And to your point, the education mountain, let's look at it on the collegiate level. They believe most of the professors on a collegiate level are secular. They're into secularism and they're anti-God, they're pro-science, anti-faith. And so they encourage a lot of these young people, unless you have your agenda, don't go to college. Unless there's a purpose for you on one of these mountains. And if it is, you're going to have to keep connecting with the apostolic hub so those professors don't steer you down a humanist pathway or an anti-God or pro-science pathway. And they need teachers to go into that arena so more conservative values can be taught, more godly values can be taught, more anti-science values can be taught. And so where it was in the beginning, in its infancy of it, was just a thought, was just an imagination, perhaps a delusion, an inspiration that somebody felt that God said there needs to be a reformation. So now we're moving from that to actually the practical part of instituting this whole agenda. It's the seven mountains. Now we're putting our money where our mouth is, so to speak, and we're strategizing, and no one's going to see us coming. And people may say, oh, they argue, you know, they may protest or whatever, but people may look at it like, that's not my religion. That's not my belief. It doesn't concern me. Oh, yes, it does. It's been affecting us, and it's going to continue to affect us no matter who's in office after November.
You know, it's interesting too, this idea, this dichotomy that you're either pro-science or pro-God. I mean, even Einstein had this thing he called the God particle, right? Like, it's connected to his views on quantum physics. There's this piece that just can't quite be explained another way yet, or maybe never. They're not mutually exclusive. And so they're not necessarily at odds with each other. But painting it that way, that it's either or, then you have people not going into the sciences, which is, that's such a loss, right? But it's so interesting to just have your world, your way of thinking being that either or, not both and.
Mm-hmm. And to continue that with the schools, if you take it out of the collegiate part, as far as activism, how are they starting to actually get active? Once upon a time, and it's still happening, it was, okay, we don't like public schools, we'll create our own Christian private schools. That is still happening, right? But now it's, we're going to go into those public schools, we're going to get on the board, we're going to go to the parent-teacher meeting. We're going to start demanding this be, you know, instituted for our children. We're going to start talking about our rights. We need prayer back in school. And so now they're not just building their own mountain. They're going into the mountains with the ideology to infiltrate and to establish their theocracy.
Whoa, this is intense. I'm so glad we're talking about this. Okay. Wow. Okay. So then Then, right, Mike Johnson, Project 2025, wherever. You just tip us.
Well, I mean, you see now, you know, and I'm talking about the active part of establishing and the strategy. It's beyond the seven mountains because they've taken these prayer groups, and I was a part of a lot of them. Yeah, before I get to Mike Johnson, I was in the pro-life movement heavy when I was in a lot of these cults. One of what I would call an apostolic movement, not necessarily a hub, was an organization called The Call by Lou Engle. And he's been doing it for decades. And a lot of what he does is he has these massive, massive prayer rallies, prayer and fasting for 12 hours in different cities. And so I've been to a ton of them when I was involved in all of that. And usually there are a lot of prayer initiatives, but the main two that were always the main theme was ending abortion, overturning Roe v. Wade, and rights for the LGBTQ to not be in existence because they felt like that was an abomination to God. And there's a prayer that he used to encourage people to pray for decades, whether you were at the rally or not. You would wear a band. It's called a life band. And every time you saw it, if you're grocery shopping, you're out with your friends or whatever, and you see it, and it reminds you to pray. And the prayer was, Jesus, I plead your blood over my sins and the sins of my nation, God and abortion, and send revival to America. And so they've been praying this for decades, right? And they didn't stop at just prayer. And that's the thing that people don't understand. They used prayer and strategy together in order to get where we are now. So what did the strategy look like besides the prayer? What they had is something called life sieges. And a group of young people, older if they wanted to as well, would go into different cities and they would stand in front of, you know, the courthouse, some governmental building, and they would have life tape, red tape that said life on it. And they would do silent prayer sieges for hours and praying that God would end abortion, praying for different politicians to take up these initiatives. And they had a big headquarter in DC where they did a lot of this. So this is where they rubbed shoulders with different politicians. And there was a whole movement with this and they started to strategize. Another big organization, what I would call apostolic movement, generals.org is the website. It's led by a lady named Cindy Jacobs. She considers herself apostle with a prophetic edge. And she took 50 states and she started to get the mountains and they started to strategize and have people not only to pray for each mountain, you know, the establishment of the Christian values of that mountain in that state, pray and start to strategize. If it's the mountain of education, go to the board meetings at the school. Go get involved. If it's government, go find out about your local politicians. Start to talk to them about different policies. And they've been doing this for years. They have a whole network that they've been doing. So we didn't just get to Trump. We didn't just get to Project 2025. They've been creating this whole thread for years. And they've used a lot of young people, you know, which, you know, as far as cult involvement, the population is typically higher with young adults who forego going to Harvard, going to Yale, maybe so that they can be involved in these type of initiatives. And it has got us to where we are now. And so Project 2025, in my opinion, I did not read the whole 900 pages because I lived some of this. And for those that want more of a clear cut of what that looks like, we don't have time to go into all of that. You can go to, they actually have it all on their website. There's videos on YouTube that break down a lot of their agenda, but a lot of it is to establish a lot of these things. They were getting downloads and apostolic hubs and ideas and strategies and prayer, and they connected with the Heritage Foundation, who have been a big policy, you know, makers for the conservative movement since the, 1970s. They've been involved for a long time with the conservative movement, and they are the brains behind it. But they're not just thinking it out of their heads. They're connecting with these apostolic centers. They're connecting with these apostles and prophets to create the policy to pass to the next conservative president to make it law.
Wow. Wow. It is really incredible. I feel like it's like something with tentacles and it's sort of getting into like the air ducts, you know, like a picture, kind of this dystopian space movie. And I wonder also about Mike Johnson, because that seems like a huge coup, right? To have someone on the inside. I mean, you know, people first meeting him, I think, saw him as a nice guy, unassuming. And then I started hearing a lot more about what he really believes. So I'd love to hear more about that from you.
Yeah, I mean, he, again, another avatar. We're looking at the political aspect of this only. And, you know, it's been set up for us to disagree with each other, left versus right, you know, liberal versus conservative, conservatism. But this is really about all this. And he's another avatar. But he has been connected to a lot of these apostles and prophets in the NAR movement. And he's a big, there's a flag that they like to have. And I think when Trump was in office, I believe Mike Pence had it in his office and different places in the Oval Office. And they have a flag that's called Appeal to Heaven. It's a white flag with a tree on it. And the person that came up with that is an apostle in this movement named Dutch Sheets. And he came up with this, I think, it's been decades since he came up with it, but it represented appealing to heaven to establish the Seven Mountain Mandate. So when Mike Johnson started to come on the scene and people knew that he had this flag, and he wasn't hiding a lot of this. He was very matter of fact that this is what I'm going to do. This is my agenda. So they're always trying to get somebody inside to establish a lot of this. You know, this is what I told some of my friends when I have conversations about this. I said, if Trump does not win this election, that doesn't mean that their agenda is shut down. They will continue to enhance it until they get another conservative in office. Because, you know, Trump gave them the wherewithal, so to speak, to make this type of agenda with not even thinking about the average American's agency. They don't care anymore. They used to hide behind it with Ronald Reagan. They used to hide behind it with Bush, you know, but now they don't care because Trump has given, he's changed the fabric of how we look at politics. He's changed the fabric of the three branches of government. You know, the balance of power has been greatly eroded under the Trump administration. And if he were to get in, there's a lot of things that he would make law via executive order. That is one of the pillars that the president will be able to just write things in, you know, bypassing Congress and write it as law. And you say, Nikki, what's law? A lot of this stuff that I've been talking about through this whole episode. There was an article that came out earlier this year. Trump's allies prepare to infuse Christian nationalism in the second administration. Politico wrote the article.
Wow. Right. So when you have something like this that's moving and growing and well-funded, then you might not be able to feel like you can take something down or dismantle it if you feel like it is potentially a danger. But it seems like from your work, getting the word out, you can inform people so that they know what to watch out for and so that there are fewer takers, you know, like we can work in that direction. And so I wonder, just from your perspective, what should people be watching out for? I know you were saying the sort of apostolic church is run in a different sort of way. And especially if they're using words like dominion. Yeah. Okay. We got you. That makes sense that that's connected. What else is sort of different about this where people can say, ah, this is what Nikki was talking about?
Yeah. If you are in a place that you believe is a church, and sometimes it starts off that way, and the pastor gets involved with some of these apostolic and prophetic folks in the movement, and then it can start to turn and change. So you have to watch out for that. And you have to watch out for if you're shopping around for a place to worship and you go in, if you hear the leader talking more about politics than actually talking about God, that may be one sign. If you hear the leader starting to do the us versus them thing a little bit more and basically damn everybody outside of the movement. That's another marker to see. If they start talking about people, you know, needing to get involved in society and, you know, get involved because, you know, the devil's people are gaining ground, then, you know, that is something to look out for. I mean, again, if you're going there to be encouraged, to be strengthened, to be have a greater connection with God, why are you talking about all these other things? And if they're inviting people, even if they don't personally talk about it, but they're inviting different guest speakers, they're inviting politicians into the church, and they're talking with that rhetoric, that is another sign that you potentially may be in an apostolic hub. There's a lot of spiritual warfare and releasing angels and, you know, tearing down the enemy's kingdom. If you're hearing a lot of that rhetoric, you may be in an apostolic hub. So those are some signs.
Wow. Wow. And if your family is not within the same belief system, are you supposed to disconnect from them?
Yeah, that is hard. And that's a decision a person has to make on a case by case basis. Because again, like we said earlier, these hubs are ripe with abuse. And if you feel like you're starting to see something's not right here, or it wasn't like this before and it's changing, don't ignore that. You know, you may not be able to say anything to the leaders because they're not going to admit that this is what they've become. But, you know, if you don't feel like it's safe anymore, then you need to possibly pull back just to get your head clear and say, what am I dealing with? And then do some research and see what feels right in your body, most importantly. Sometimes that means separating from others that are really strong on talking about a lot of this stuff. And that's the language they speak all the time. You might have to remove yourself from that.
Okay. Oh, that's so powerful. I know we have to wrap things up. I don't know if there was one last point that you wanted to make sure to make. And I also want people to know where to find you. So go ahead.
Well, I want to send a kind of a shout out, if you will, to survivors of this environment and who have left a while ago. And then seeing Trump rise to power has exacerbated some of, you know, the trauma that they've experienced a long time ago, and they might have come out of that. And now they're seeing that this is starting to take root in our nation. And it feels very traumatizing. I want to honor you and say, I see you. I feel the same way. You know, it can be very eerie to see where our country is headed. Stay informed as much as your body allows you to. And maybe you feel like getting involved. There are organizations that are helping others to inform others of some of the things I talked about. But just know you're not alone. And, you know it's not just you. You're seeing this play out. You've experienced this. And I just want to send comfort to you and to your heart that take day by day, do what you can to take care of you in these trying times.
Beautiful message. Okay. And so, where can people find you and your work and all that you're doing?
NikkiGSpeaks.com is my website. All my social media handles you'll find on the website, so I won't run them down now. If you are a Black religious trauma survivor or Black cult survivor, you'll find information on my website on how you can get involved in the support groups and the work that I'm doing there. But start at my website and you'll be able to contact me if you want to. NikkiGSpeaks@yahoo.com if you have a comment or question or what have you. But I hope as you listen to this, again, like I said in the beginning, this is not to bash anybody's beliefs or affiliations, but understand the origin of how we got here. You know, encourage you to, you know, do your own research and come up with where you feel it's best when it's time to vote in November.
Fantastic. Nikki, it is always so nice to talk to you. And I learned so much and I love your insights. And I love that you're out there helping people navigate all of this. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate being a guest on here again.
One more thing before you go. my goodness. Thank you to Nikki. It's so interesting to hear Nikki speak. I want to mention that so often people will ask me, what is someone's experience like who has been involved in a cultic group or a Bible-based cult? And it really is the case that everyone has had their own experience. It's like asking a child what their experience was growing up in a certain family system. And if they have siblings, very often the siblings have a different impression, maybe not completely, but somewhat different impression or different memories that are part of their collective source of memories because they have a different nervous system, because they had different needs, because there was a different birth order, etc. The same thing is true for people who are of different ethnicities, people who are of different religions, people who are of different genders, people of different races. There is a difference in experience based on need, based on expectation, based on past trauma. A lot of the people I speak to who are African American, who describe themselves as Black Christians, will say that the church was their home, as we talked about on this show, was their home away from home. That was their family. There are so many people who talk about having it been the core of their community and a place where their family found belonging, where their family found community, solace, support. And so it became even harder to look at any kind of abuses or emotional neglect or psychological endangerment or physical endangerment. And so when Nikki started this organization, reaching out to a particular community, it was so vitally needed in a way that I think people didn't understand. And it's wonderful that she is providing something like that. It's also interesting to hear some of the language that she uses that is so alarming to me. When she talks about how within these groups, there is the desire for spiritual colonization and the idea or the goal being dominionism, I shudder at those words. When someone or when a group is talking about taking over, really taking over, they are doing something that I think should give everyone pause and should really make people wonder about their ability to retain their religious rights or their right to not be religious. There are so many different traditions also within just the United States alone that make up the United States to be what it is, that it is this melting pot. It is a place for people to come and share and learn from each other's traditions and hopefully be able to uphold their own traditions and respect each other's traditions. But words like colonization and dominionism don't speak of sharing. They don't give you the impression that there's going to be equal respect for others. I really think sometimes about how Jesus would feel. Now, I didn't know him personally. I know he was a fellow Jew. And I wonder how he would take it, thinking that in his name, people want to take over the world. From what I remember learning, there was this sense of acceptance, of accepting another person for who they are and how they are, of people living peaceably with respect all together, with understanding too that people were going to be different from each other and that they needed to be seen as people just like everyone else and equal just like everyone else. And in Jesus's name, in God's name, there are people out there, millions of people, who are telling a very different story, who are saying it is this way or the highway. And we know where that can lead. And it can lead to very scary places. So it's very important to not be desensitized to these words just because we're hearing them a lot in the news, just because you're hearing them a lot here on the podcast. Colonization, dominionism, even when she was talking about in the Apostolic Church, you need to surrender. The idea of surrendering is also a scary one. When I deal with the fallout from that as a therapist, people who lost their rights, people who lost their voice, people who could no longer say what was true for them, could no longer ever say no to anything, that is also fraught with danger. So this is not to scare you as much as it's to make you aware and to have you really feel these words and to hear how much they are about taking over, not providing people with what they need, not making this world a more holy place, but making it actually a place that's going to be homogenous, a place that's going to be intolerant of anything different. And that is a world that I could imagine would be one that would be scary to live in. So stay up on these stories. And thank you so much to Nikki and all she's doing, not only through going on podcasts, having her own show, educating people, but her work as a coach, her work with her organization, offering healing, offering a safe place to come and talk about these very incendiary and scary ideas. Take good care. Talk to you next week.
Thank you very much for listening. Please support Indoctrination on Patreon at patreon.com/indoctrination. Be sure to give us a follow on our social media. Find us on Facebook and Instagram using @indoctrinationpodcast. And for Twitter, find us @_indoctrination. We love hearing from you too. So send us an email at indoctrinationshow@gmail.com. And for more updates on the show, visit our website at www.podpage.com/indoctrination.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.